call to order the House Committee on Environment and Water and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 663. So, who's up? I don't have the witness sheet in front of me, but if you're here to testify on Senate Bill 663, then come on in. Christina, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name's Christina McNitt, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress, which is a statewide trade association representing irrigation districts, water control districts, and other water entities. Senate Bill 663 was introduced at our request to provide clear direction to irrigation districts when they need to fill a vacancy in their district boards of directors. Irrigation districts are considered local governments.
Sorry, Christine. So, committee members know, public, the buzzing is caused by BlackBerries, typically, or other cell phones, so they need to be off, not just silent. It's not Christina, it's not me, and it's not Representative Gilliam, so someone else. Go ahead.
So, irrigation districts are considered local governments in statute, and they follow their own set of statutes found in ORS Chapter 545 for the conduct of their elections. And that includes the nomination and election of their boards of directors. But these statutes are silent on filling a board vacancy. Currently, when a vacancy occurs, districts have relied on statutes that direct special districts generally, which is found in another section, ORS 198.320. So basically, Senate Bill 663 mirrors special district language found in ORS 198.320 and inserts it into the irrigation district statutes. And you'll read in Section 2 of the bill, Senate Bill 663, basically it says if there's a vacancy, then the remaining directors of the board appoint the position. That person remains in that position until the end of the year, runs for election, and then is appointed to fill out the rest of the term at the annual meeting. The only difference in Section 2 between Sub 1 and Sub 2 is that irrigation districts, kind of like legislative districts, some of them are divided in divisions, which is similar to your precincts. And so a board of director might represent a particular division as opposed to being elected at large. So that, in summary, Mr. Chair, is the contents of Senate Bill 663.
Okay. Let's see if there are any questions. There are none. With that, seeing no one else to testify on Senate Bill 663, I'll close that public hearing and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 664. You're here on that as well.
Yes.
So public hearing on Senate Bill 664. Go ahead.
Thank you again, Christina McNitt, for the record, representing Oregon Water Resources Congress. And House Bill 664, which I bet you figured out from the number right after 663, also brought to you by the Oregon Water Resources Congress. It basically extends a sunset for a currently operating pilot project with the Oregon Water Resources Department. The program was initially established in 2003. The sunset was extended in 2007, and it's here before you today. The A-Engross version extends the sunset another 6 years until 2015. And what it does is it allows irrigation districts that have met specific criteria to do temporary transfers of water inside a district boundary for a one-year period. They do that. They basically kind of aggregate the transfers inside their district boundaries and then submit that to the department, saving the department some of the time of managing that. Interestingly enough, in districts across Oregon, almost half of all water rights are delivered, and we employ a lot of water masters ourselves that our district patrons pay for. In addition to extending the sunset, Senate Bill 664 extends the pilot project from the original three districts that were allowed to participate, it adds another 12 for a total of 15 pilot projects. We would just like to get some more information about how the program's working with the department before we contemplate maybe repealing the sunset altogether and moving this from a pilot project to something more permanent. But quite frankly, neither the department nor the districts have enough experience or knowledge on the program to feel comfortable doing that at this point. So that, in summary, is what the bill does. It also would allow Water Control District to participate. You might notice Representative Gilliam, the Santiam Water Control District, is one of the listed districts. The difference between a Water Control District and an Irrigation District is that they often do flood control as well as deliver water. And the other minor item that the bill does is it provides a map of the water use to the Water Master rather than just having a map available for the Water Master upon request, the Water Master of the Water Resources Department.
Okay. Christine, my only question, at what point does a pilot program no longer become a pilot because we've extended it to so many districts and extended the sunset multiple times such that it really represents a robust permanent program?
Mr. Chair, members, our hope is that at the end of 2015, when we're back in front of you, we'll be able to have the data to tell you that this is a robust program and it's good enough to let it be permanent and not to continue to extend the sunsets. The bill originally contemplated expanding the program to 25 districts, but there was some opposition to that on the Senate side, and we worked closely with Water Watch and with the Senate committee to come up with the agreements in the A engrossed version. And so we not only narrowed down from 25 to 15, but we specifically named in statute which districts would be eligible for the program.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a natural evolution of the 3111 work and all the other foundational work that was done all those years ago. So it's great to see this device apparently working well and allowing a more efficient use of water within these districts and providing a foundation for checking with that map. So it's a great deal, and I'm very happy to see it being expanded.
Thank you, Representative Benson. As you're well aware, the Oahe Irrigation District in your district is one of the initial three districts in the pilot project.
Any other questions? There are none. We do have Mr. Paul here from the department also to testify. Come on up.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. For the record, Tom Paul, Deputy Director, Oregon Water Resources Department. Christina did a very good job summarizing the bill, and the department does support continuing the current program and expanding to the new list of irrigation districts. As was pointed out, the bill as written does include a requirement for the map to be delivered to the Water Master, and the past provisions did not have that, so that will be very beneficial to us. We do, again, support the adoption of this.
Great. Any questions for the department? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 664 and turn the gavel over to my vice chair to deal with SCR 10 and SJM 11. If you manage to get through these before I return, I would suggest adjourning the committee and doing what I would be loath to do, which is give everyone a free afternoon.
I'd be happy to do so. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Come back when you can.
Start with that one.
You worked all these already?
No, we haven't. We're not going to do those.
Okay. All right, so let's open a public hearing on SCR 10. We've got one guest, Barbara Bacon Folon. Welcome and identify yourself, and you can begin.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Bacon Folon, and I'm representing the family of the late Dr. Robert L. Bacon. I'd like to thank the sponsors and the committee for considering this resolution that recognizes my father's work on the Oregon Beach Bill many years ago. It's a tremendous honor to our family and confirms the value of Oregon's public beaches. I imagine that my father was in a hearing room very similar to this 42 years ago when he worked on the Beach Bill. As an academician, he had no prior experience with the political process. He was brave to advocate for that bill and did so without any hesitation at all. He did consider his work on that bill as the greatest accomplishment of his life. And to be sure, he had many accomplishments. And today, as I visit the Oregon beaches and see hundreds of people enjoying the free, unrestricted access to the beaches, I stop and think of the incredible, unique legacy that my father left for us all. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for coming. I'm sure that you know Representative Boone, and I'm sorry that she's not here at the moment, but are there any committee members that have comments or questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am pleased that this resolution has come before us. And we get another shot at honoring Dr. Bacon. After the last hearing that we had on Dr. Bacon, my father, who has worked in coastal management his entire professional career, called me up and said that he was one of Dr. Bacon was one of the greatest individuals that he'd ever known. And I hadn't had a chance to put that on the record before today, but I didn't have the honor of knowing him myself, but I know that he was thought very highly of.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Do you want to move this one? Open it.
We have a quorum now.
Yeah. The quorum present, I'd like to open a... I'd like to close the public hearing on SCR 10. And open a work session on SCR 10. And we would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair?
No. Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I move SCR 10 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves SCR 10 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Are there any, is there any opposition? Seeing none. SCR 10 is adopted. And I would suggest Representative Boone, if that's all right with everyone. And that's what we'll do. We'll hand this to Representative Boone. We thank you for being here, and we'll close the work session on SCR 10. And I'm going to open a public hearing on SJM 11. We have three folks signed up: Ken Niles, Armin Minthorn, and Doug Riggs. All come forward and please begin. Identify yourself and be glad to hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ken Niles. I'm an assistant director with the Oregon Department of Energy and have worked with the Oregon Department of Energy on our Hanford Oversight Program now for the past 19 years. I appreciate your consideration of this Senate Joint Memorial Number 11. As you all are aware, I'm sure, of the risk, the long-term risk that the Hanford site poses to the state of Oregon and the Columbia River. Throughout the past 20 years or so, the Oregon legislature has approved memorials and resolutions of this type that have been very useful for us in setting out an official high-level policy statement in terms of Oregon's interests and the risks that Oregon faces. I would like to share with you just briefly some recent developments at Hanford that I think you'll find of interest. Hanford is going to be a very big beneficiary of federal stimulus money. Hanford at the moment is in line to receive over $1.9 billion that will go towards cleanup. And it has been very heartening over the past few weeks to see the list of cleanup projects that will be either completed or started with that money. And I think we need to give credit to the U.S. Department of Energy, its contractors, and the regulators for the fact they were ready to move when this opportunity came up. We were on a tour last week of the Hanford site with some members of the Oregon Hanford Cleanup Board. And in the 19 years I've been going to Hanford, this was by far the most activity in terms of cleanup that I have seen at the site. And it's heartening to see that we have, I think, finally gotten over some stumbling blocks of early in the years of Hanford cleanup. And there's a lot of progress that we'll be seeing over the next couple of years. What's a little bit disheartening is the fact that $2 billion is as large amount of money as that is, and as much as will be done at Hanford with that, and as much as it is needed, it still, in some respects, only just nudges the overall Hanford cleanup forward just by a bit. We're still looking at completion, regardless of this influx of money, sometime in the 2040s or 2050s or 2060s or even beyond. The other bit of news I'll share with you is that as of April 3rd, State of Oregon is now a party to litigation involving Hanford cleanup on two very important cleanup projects at Hanford. One is a schedule to get a treatment facility up and operational that will immobilize the 53 million gallons of high-level radioactive waste that's stored in 177 aging underground tanks in Hanford, as well as a schedule that they've had difficulty in meeting in terms of retrieving some of the waste out of the oldest of these tanks. As you may be aware, Oregon is not a regulator at Hanford. We have fought for access to being a part of some of the decision-making in Hanford to, in some cases, just even getting into certain meetings. So the good news, bad news with this is the good news is for the first time, Oregon will be at the table when discussions are held related to some very important cleanup projects at Hanford. The bad news is it took litigation to get us there. And even with the judges granting Oregon's party status as of April 3rd, the U.S. Department of Justice is still resisting Oregon's involvement in any potential negotiation settlement. So we've made it very clear that we are now a part of this, and we do intend to be involved. So a couple of things that are fairly recent. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Niles, I want to ask you, could you comment on our neighbor to the north? Have they had the same difficulty in being at the table, that is, State of Washington?
Mr. Chair, they have not. They are a regulator as part of the tri-party agreement, which is a joint cleanup agreement between the U.S. Department of Energy, State of Washington as a state regulator, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. For the most part, you know, we have allied ourselves well with the State of Washington. They have provided us information and access to certain meetings, but in terms of the major decisions, in terms of how cleanup will occur, we have been excluded.
One other question about Washington. Have they joined in a similar resolution? I know they're out of session. I'm very jealous of that. But they're done now, but did they do a similar resolution to Congress?
Mr. Chair, I am not aware whether or not they have or not.
And then one last one, I'll open it up if other people have questions, is how would you characterize particularly the Oregon delegation, perhaps the Washington delegation, in terms of their interest in helping with a resolution like this?
Mr. Chair, they have been across party lines unanimously supportive since the beginning of cleanup. The Oregon and Washington delegations have worked very closely in support of primarily achieving necessary funding, but they have been very strong supporters of progress at Hanford.
Good. Any other, if you don't mind, we'll have questions of Mr. Niles, and then we can move on to the next panelist. Any questions or comments?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vice Chair. It is interesting. Years ago when I was going to law school, one of our law school professors would remark that the Columbia was the most radioactive river in the world, and probably wrong now, but then when I was on the Water Resource Commission, we would have reports each year. And I'm still struck by remembering the silence in the room when the person making the report to the commission finished.
because of the sheer dread that accompanies any discussion of Hanford. And it strikes me that this resolution or any words fail to convey the dangerous nature of the situation. I mean, the incredibly dangerous nature of the situation. And it's sad that we're limited to just this when we look at that, how hard it is to clean up that mess. And so I'm happy to be able to vote on this today, but sad that there could be more done. Happy for the almost $2 billion. Sad that that's probably, as you said, just a mere fraction of what we need. So I'm happy you're here. And
thank you.
I wish it was a lot more money being spent to fix that horrid mess.
Thank you.
Minter.
Good afternoon, Chair and Committee. My name is Armand Minthorn. I'm with the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla. Over the years, the states of Oregon and the tribes Umatilla have had a very good working relationship in regards to Hanford. One of the common components that the state of Oregon and the tribe share is the Columbia River. Even though the river borders two states, potentially the effect of what's in the water will affect both states and the tribes. That's the bottom line. We are talking about the most contaminated site in the nation. We are talking about radioactive material that's going to be there for 10,000 years and longer. So cleanup and final disposition of cleanup is important. And how that waste is going to be managed when we're gone, when our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren are gone. Long-term stewardship is one of the key principles in cleanup at Hanford. Over the years, the Hanford Reach has been one of the links for the tribes, one of the affected tribes as we as Umatilla. The Hanford Reach is the last remaining area for spawning of the salmon in the whole entire Columbia River. Because of the contamination that is in the groundwater now at Hanford, the risk is increasing for that contamination to reach the Hanford Reach. In particular, because of that threat, it's important that states of Oregon, along with the tribes, have a voice in decision and cleanup process at Hanford. This is important. We have a responsibility not only to the resources as a state and a tribe, but that responsibility is going to be reflected from the generations that are following me and you. So this is what's important, in particular, on how cleanup is going to be done and the effects of cleanup. So over the years, again, the tribes and the state of Oregon have worked diligently and sometimes becoming frustrated with the Department of Energy and the federal government. But as Mr. Niles has pointed out, things are beginning to progress now because of the new management at Hanford. We have a manager there now that wants to involve all of the stakeholders. And the states of Oregon is a stakeholder because of the water, because of the Columbia River, and what that water means to the state of Oregon. So on behalf of the tribes, again, want to thank the committee and the chair for the consideration of this memorial number 11. And I truly hope that the efforts that have done to date can be protected. The efforts and momentum that has been created needs to continue. We cannot forward to have this effort and momentum slow down. The cleanup at Hanford has to progress and go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Riggs?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs on behalf of the Hanford Information Network. I'm not the lobbyist for the Hanford Information Network. I'm actually the co-founder. This is an organization that we founded about 12 years ago, and there's a group of volunteers who run it in the state. And it was based on the premise that the further and further we got away from the Cold War and World War II, the fewer and fewer people would be aware of Hanford. And our strong sense was that we needed to continue reminding both the citizens of the Northwest and people back in Washington, D.C., what was at Hanford, what the challenges we faced are and will be, and why it was important to fund and fully fund the operation. What we're talking about here is the legacy of 40 years of Cold War nuclear production. Plutonium produced at Hanford by running uranium pellets through nuclear reactors, dissolving them in acid and other chemicals, and extracting a very small amount of plutonium. So when you started with an absolutely gigantic amount of material, you ended up with a little bit of plutonium, and everything else was waste. And so that has led to two-thirds of the nation's volume of nuclear waste sitting at Hanford. The biggest threat is 53 million gallons of liquid radioactive waste, most of it liquid, although some of it solidified over the years, sitting in 177 underground steel tanks. Now, if you've ever taken a tin can and put it out in a field for 4 or 5 years, you know what happens to a tin can. And the same thing is essentially happening to those underground steel tanks. The first 124, I think, were built in the 40s and 50s, maybe the early 60s. They had a 25-year design life. Do the math from 1950 to add 25 years, and you see that almost every single one of those tanks is well beyond its design life. In the 60s, we built 48 underground double-shelled tanks that had a 40-year design life. So if they were built in 1964, they reached the end of their design life last year. And so we have highly toxic, corroding nuclear material sitting in these underground tanks, and it is a very timely, costly process to get the waste out of the tanks and do something with it. As Ken mentioned, the annual cleanup budget at Hanford is approximately $2 billion a year. It's almost unimaginable how much money we spend. But yet every year in Congress we face, ongoing battles, fights to make sure that we protect cleanup funding, to make sure that that waste is being treated, contained, and hopefully vitrified, which is turned into glass, which will be a safer form of storage for the 10,000 to 100,000 years that those radioactive materials will be around. So it really is a monumental task and something that is a threat to the Columbia River, to fish and wildlife, and to all of us living in the area, something that has to be done. We focus on outreach and education. I noticed a couple of you up there with laptops. We have just, in the last few months, launched an educational program that we're taking out to high schools throughout the Northwest. If you want to go on to www.protectthecolumbiariver.org, you will see our initial version of our website, which is designed for high school science classes. In the past 8 years, we've been out to about 7,000 students in close to 700 classes. In Oregon and Washington, mainly in Washington, because our grant is from the Department of Ecology, and really an effort to make sure that the youth of our nation understand the importance of cleaning up Hanford and the opportunities, because this is going to be progressing far beyond my involvement. This is a 40 to 45 or 50-year process, and the ultimate cleanup won't be for hundreds if not thousands of years, so it's very important. So I want to echo Ken and Armand's comments. Very much support this resolution. It's a small piece of the puzzle to keep all of you involved and informed, to keep the citizens of Oregon informed about the important work at Hanford. And anything we can do, we'd love to take you up to Hanford, look around. As Ken mentioned, some very good progress is taking place. When I started on this in 1994, 1995, 75% of the money at Hanford was being spent on oversight, administrative functions, cost studies, et cetera. Today, if you went back there, it's probably 10 or 15% spent on overhead and 75 to 80% spent on actual on-the-ground cleanup efforts. So something we strongly support. So I urge your support of this very important measure, and thank you for your time.
Thanks, Doug. See if there are any questions. Is there stimulus-related money to go into Hanford? It seems like there was a significant additional allocation of dollars for Hanford Clean.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Ken mentioned that there was about $1.95 billion, which was really terrific. The concern that many of the environmental advocates have about that stimulus package is that there's a concern that they'll just delete that from the annual budgets from 2011 and 2012 and 2013, and so we'll end up with the same amount of money. Congress and the administration have been underfunding, particularly the tank waste cleanup budget, to the tune of about $200 million a year below what the estimates were to keep the project on track. So this money was meant to catch that project up and get things back on track. And if Congress simply deletes the $1.7, $1.9 billion from what would have been expected to come to Hanford in the next 4 or 5 years, then we're back to square one, and we're behind the eight ball on the budget and the funding issues. So we're urging Congress to provide the stimulus money and provide full budgets for annual appropriations.
Yeah, I hope that's the case, and I hope the federal government will continue to be a good partner in the cleanup efforts. I was a little bit concerned if the press reports were accurate when then-candidate Obama visited, I think, Pendleton, was his Eastern Oregon stop. I believe there was a question on Hanford cleanup, and the answer was something along the lines of, I'm not sure, I don't know a lot about it. And it sort of, to my mind, it highlighted one of the sort of problems with our presidential election system and the focus, the intimate focus that candidates have on, you know, Iowa and New Hampshire and very local issues there. But a candidate who appeared not to have really the background to take a question on Hanford, despite its, you know, regional and national significance as a site of really terrible importance. So hopefully we're making progress and we'll see continued and additional federal investment in the important work there. Appreciate the resolution. Seeing nothing further, I will close. Representative Jensen.
In light of the fact I'm on this bill, I think, may I
please do
make a comment or two? And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, for being late. I got waylaid in the hall, as happens when you walk the gauntlet here. But I would simply like to emphasize and re-echo the comments that have been made that I've heard from you here. I certainly appreciate Armin for coming over, and I appreciate the dedication that he has given to pursuing this end or objective of cleaning up Hanford. I mean, he's been following this and working at it for a long time now, and I appreciate his statement that we are a stakeholder in this, even though we have sometimes not in any way been considered a stakeholder. We've had to fight to just hear. And when we're downwind, if you wish, from the facility and from the problems, and when we share the water with the, that is currently being contaminated by the Hanford plume that's spreading out there. It seems to me like we should legitimately be a stakeholder, and I have encouraged every session since I've been here, I think, a memorial of this sort to go back to Washington to try to move this process along. And sometimes, as I've looked at this thing, and sometimes a little bit from afar, but it has looked to me like our good friends and neighbors across the river have far too big a payroll there for them to want to see this cleanup ever completed. I'm sorry to be cynical about it, but the figure has been given you of $2 billion a year sort of thing being spent there. That's a huge payroll, and I don't know. And I find it interesting that the Richmond High School motto is still the bombers. which in a lot of ways in recent years some of these things have come into being, you know, politically incorrect, I guess, maybe is the way to say it. I don't. But the serious side of it is that it is a problem. It's a huge problem. And your comments, Mr. Chair, about the president when he made a stop in Pendleton did cost him a lot of votes in Eastern Oregon. Among those people who know something about Hanford, to come into my backyard where you have the biggest environmental problem in the United States. It's not that it's in a little dink of a town, you know, somewhere stuck out in the wilderness. It's the biggest problem. It did not go well, you know, in the area. And I'm sure if at least I had been the campaigning person, I would have had a lot to say to certain people about why I didn't know more about this when I found out something about it. But, you know, be that as it may, I think the efforts that we make here today and have made in the past have kept this issue alive and kept the pressure on. Not a lot of pressure. We don't have a lot of muscle. All of those things I understand. But we would really be derelict if we didn't use the little muscle that we have to keep this alive and try to get this this mess cleaned up. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry to, again,
thank you for your efforts to keep our Congress and others engaged on this issue. I really appreciate that. Seeing nothing further, I will close the public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 11 and open a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 11, and I would accept the motion from anyone. Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I defer to Representative Jensen.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you. I would move that we move our Joint Memorial 11 to the floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Representative Jensen moves Senate Joint Memorial to the 11 to the floor with a two-pass recommendation with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Excuse.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Yeah, aye.
Vice Chair Smith.
Yes.
Vice Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Chair Kim.
Aye. Motion carries, and Representative Jensen, would you carry this to the floor, please?
Thank you.
Representative Jensen will carry it to the floor and close the work session on Senate Joint Memorial 11. Let's open up a work session on Senate Bill 663 and see if we can take care of 663 and 664. There were a couple of members absent for the public testimony that we had just earlier this hour on these bills. Neither has opposition, and I would accept a motion on 663.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Benz.
I would move Senate Bill 663 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Benz moves Senate Bill 663 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was one of those who was late getting here. Does this change the process of the election at all? Or does it simply allow for filling a vacancy between elections?
Christine, you want to come up and make sure that we get the correct answers and not my or someone else's potentially off the cuff?
It seems to me we already changed the rule on elections, but perhaps I'm wrong about that.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record again, Christina McNitt representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress. What Senate Bill 663 does is take MIRA's language in the special district statutes and inserts it in the statutes regulating irrigation district elections, which for some odd reason specifies nomination processes, election processes, but is silent on how to fill a vacancy.
Ah, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just mention that we had an occasion a number of years ago on the Owyhee Irrigation District where this issue came up, and this would have been hugely helpful. So I'm very happy to see it.
I would add. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would add that I'm going to support this, but I was with Christina until she likened it to the appointment process for the legislature, and that started making me a little nervous. I didn't really enjoy that, but I'm going to vote for it.
Worked out for you.
Yeah, well. He's more worried about what it did to the state.
Any further discussion? Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Daly?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 663 is to the floor, and I would put it on the consent calendar if there is no objection. Seeing none, so moved. And with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 663 and take up work session on Senate Bill 664 and accept a motion on moving this bill to the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilliam.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 664A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gilliam moves Senate Bill 664A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Chair Cannon?
Aye. Motion carries. And Senate Bill 664 goes to the floor with a due pass. And Representative Smith, will you carry the bill?
Sure.
Thank you. I think this does somewhat more than just make a technical change and is worth having the opportunity to talk about. And with that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 664. And I think we will do, is it going to annoy anybody if we do Senate Bill 104, to which I don't think there's any opposition in this committee? Have we indicated otherwise about our schedule on this to anybody?
No.
Okay, in that case, let's open a work session on Senate Bill 104. And members, this was a bill that to which we did not hear opposition. It changes the schedule and the indexing on a DEQ fee. Apparently, is consistent with the intent of the legislation adopted last session, and we heard it in committee on April 30th. And I would take a motion on Senate Bill 104. Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and with the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Be rescinded.
Be rescinded.
I apologize, as I have missed that this had that reference. So why don't you make the motion... Would that be best? We just get a clean motion on this. So we're.
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my motion.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Bailey moves Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Just real quickly, it's okay if you don't have an answer to this, Mr. Chair, but do you have a characterization for the opposition in the Senate? Because I'm not aware of what it was based on.
I do not.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chair.
You may.
For what it's worth, we had a bill in the Revenue Committee this morning that had a similar voting pattern in the Senate. We couldn't figure it out either, and the bill passed unanimously from our committee. So,
good.
For what it's worth.
Good. Seeing no further discussion, Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries, and unless there's objection, we'll place this on the consent calendar. There is none, and the Senate Bill 104 will be on the consent calendar. With that, I am going to close the work session on Senate Bill 104 and carry over work sessions on, I don't know that we even absolutely have to do it this way, but it might be easier. So we'll carry over work sessions on Senate Bill 105 and 102A. 195 and 102A. Representative Jensen, you and I both missed the vote on SCR 10, and we can take a motion to allow you to vote, and I to vote on that, if you would like.
Here's a motion.
Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended to allow you and Representative Jensen to vote on that. Was it Memorial Resolution?
SCR 10.
Hey, Representative Barnhart moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of allowing me and Representative Jensen to vote on SCR 10. Is there objection? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. And Representative Jensen, how do you vote?
Aye.
As do I. I vote aye. And that's done. And I think that's the end of our business. Am I right, Beth?
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you, committee. 3:45, close the Committee on Environment and Water.